නමෝතස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ. නමෝතස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ. නමෝතස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ. So probably you can remember what we were doing. Basically, the Magandhya Sutta. This is the 75th Sutta in the Majjhima Nikaya, where Buddha come across very interesting incident with the wanderer Magandhya and the Brahmin Bharadwaja. So Buddha was using a grass thread to sit and meditate, and it was the occasion that wanderer Magandhya noticed it. And then from Brahmin Bharadwaja, he asked for whom it was prepared, and then he mentioned it is for the Buddha. And Magandhya vehemently sort of discouraged that or condemned that, saying that Buddha is someone who is destroyer of the growth. And then the Brahmin Bharadwaja rejected. He want to sort of talk in favor of the Buddha, but still Wanderer Magandhya defend himself, telling that it is coming in their discourses. Anyway, the whole discussion was heard by the Buddha from his divine eye, and later he come to the occasion and he asked directly from the Brahmin Bharadwaja about that discussion, and he was surprised that how Buddha came to know that. And while that discussion is going on, Magandhi also come to the discussion, join with the discussion, and there again Buddha immediately asked the exact reason why he has called him as a destroyer of the growth. And there Buddha particularly directly mention exact reason why Magandhya has called him the destroyer of the growth, because basically Buddha teaches what we call sense restraint. So basically, sense restraint is not that interesting subject for many sensually addicted type of people, because they want to go through, or they want to enjoy senses as much as possible. Say at youthful people and sort of energetic people, they want to enjoy senses, and as a result of that, if someone is talking about sense restrainment, so they feel it's awkward, it's not necessary. And if someone is trying to restrain one's eyes, restraining one's ears, restraining one's nose, tongue, body, and ultimately the mind, so they find it useless, because it is not the purpose of the life. The purpose of the life is very much based on the pleasure principle, having pleasures as much as possible. So that is the typical attitude. Anyway, Buddha discussed this topic with Magandhya in detail, and he is giving many interesting similes in this sutta, and here he's talking about five areas. Having understood as they actually are, the origin, the disappearance, the gratification, the danger, and the escape, in the case of forms. Now, basically, with respect to forms, sounds, smells, tastes, tangibles, actually we can repeat the same thing. So one has to know the beginning or the origin, the disappearance, the gratification, the danger, and the escape. Samudaya, Attangama, Assada, Adinava, and then the Nisarana. So these are the five areas typically in Dhamma, which is mentioned. So when one goes through Satipatthana practice, so one is able to recognize all these different maybe sense chords, on the other hand Rupakkhanda, the form aggregate, or the perception aggregate, feeling aggregate, formations aggregate, consciousness aggregate. So these are the ones actually one is recognizing during the Satipatthana practice, during the mindfulness practice. When one is continuing mindfulness coupled with the clear comprehension. samudaya dhamma anupassīvā kāyasmin viharati, vaya dhamma anupassīvā kāyasmin viharati. So that indicates that one sees how these bodily phenomena are arising, how these bodily phenomena are ceasing. So that means one is aware about these many different bodily phenomena. And same thing can be applied to sounds, smells, tastes, forms, etc. So one can see how they are arising, how one can see how they are passing away. But typically during the meditation, we take first about the tangibles, how certain touch sensation arising and passing away, how certain bodily phenomena arising and passing away, like rising and falling, how it is arising and passing away. So at the beginning, one may has a kind of gross type of understanding, but later more refined, subtle and profound understanding is possible as one's faculties are growing. Now, according to Buddha, now if one is developing like that, so then Buddha mentioned, so he might abandon craving for forms, remove fever for forms, and abide without thirst, with a mind inwardly at peace. What would you say to him, Magandhi? Now Buddha is giving an alternative. Rather than gratifying senses, now Buddha say you are understanding their true nature, and as a result of that, one is able to abandon craving for forms, remove fever for forms, and abide without thirst, with the mind inwardly at peace. So now he is asking, for such person, what are you going to tell? So then Magandhi say there is nothing to tell. Basically, Magandhi has no answer for that. Now same thing now Buddha repeats for the other senses as well. That means sounds, smells, tastes, tangibles. And there Buddha mentioned, he actually went through all this happiness. He as a prince had three palaces, one for the rainy season, one for the winter, and one for the summer. So there he explained how much of sensual pressure he has went through. So basically he mentioned that, enjoy myself with musicians, none of whom were men. And I did not go down to the lower palace, so during the rainy season. So that means full of sense pleasures, full of association with women. And all that indicates that he is someone who, to the full extent, has gone through all those sensual pleasures. But later he mentioned, he understood that origin, disappearance, gratification, danger, and the escape. So those five areas he thoroughly understood. As a result of that, he abandoned craving. So I abandoned craving for sensual pleasures. I removed fever for sensual pleasures. And I abide without thirst, with a mind inwardly at peace. Now this is very interesting. How he is now living, after understanding all that danger, all that gratification, and ultimately the escape, everything. So he basically now have the capacity to live at peace inwardly, without any thirst for these sense pleasures. Now, on the other hand, he is mentioning, now he see how certain others who are not free from lust for sensual pleasures, being devoured by craving for sensual pleasures, burning with fever for sensual pleasures, indulging in sensual pleasures, and I do not envy them, nor do I delight therein. Why is that? Because there is, Magandhi, a delight apart from sensual pleasures, apart from unwholesome states, which surpasses even divine bliss. Since I take delight in that, I do not envy what is inferior, nor do I delight therein. Now here we can see how Buddha now in a way enjoying certain amount of happiness, which is completely derived away from these sensual pleasures. it is not that he is living a very dry, monotonous type of life in that sense. So he is enjoying something which is even surpassing the divine bliss. Now, when that is said, now actually he is giving another example to prove that. So he is talking about a householder. He is a rich householder with lot of property, lot of wealth, and he is going through all these sensual pleasures, courts of sensual pleasure. If he want to see something beautiful, he has that. If he want to listen music, he can do that. And if there are fragrances, if he needs, he can do that. If there are flavors which he is interested, he can have that. So all that typical sensual pleasures he is going through. But interesting point is, he is anyway conducting himself of well in body. That means he is doing something good from the body, something good from the word, something good from the mind. That means kaya sucharita, vak sucharita, mano sucharita. So as a result of that, what happens? He is capable of, after the dissolution of the body, that means after his passing away, he is born into a divine realm, heavenly realm. Now he is enjoying with nymphs in the Nandana grove. Now typically in the Tavatinsa it is mentioned there is a very beautiful forest or kind of a park called Nandana grove. Now there this deva is now enjoying senses. Now that enjoyment is actually more surpassing the human sensual pleasures. Now this is a divine sensual pleasure. What he is now going through, it's a divine sensual pleasure he is now going through, and he is enjoying that. Now Buddha is asking a very interesting question. What do you think, Mahagadhi? Would that young god, surrounded by the group of nymphs in the Nandana grove, enjoying himself, provided and endowed with the five courts of divine sensual pleasure, envy the householder or the householder's son for the five courts of human sensual pleasure? Now here it's a human sensual pleasure. Now he was enjoying all that human sensual pleasure, but he has conducted something good from the body, words and the mind. As a result of that, he was fortunate to have a divine birth. Now he got divine sensual pleasures, which is surpassing the human sensual pleasures. Now Buddha is asking the question, after seeing a householder, that means a human householder, is this young god in certain amount of envy or any kind of he wants to have that, that means the human sensual pleasure? So then Magandhi says, no, Master Gautama. Now he is asking why, what's the reason? Because divine sensual pleasures are more excellent and sublime than human sensual pleasures. Now this is the example that Buddha is giving. Now same thing Buddha is repeating. Now that means he went through all the sensual pleasures as a prince, and he had three palaces, all that was available. And later he understood the arising, the passing away, or the origin and the disappearance, and then the danger, the escape, everything he understood. As a result of that, he abandoned sensual desire, which is provocative of lust. And he abandoned all that sensual fever, and now he is living with a more sublime kind of happiness, internally quenched. There is no thirst. Now after seeing a householder who is going through all these sensual desires, sensual pleasures, he don't have any envy, because he is enjoying a kind of a pleasure which is more divine or more sublime than the typical sensual pleasures. Since I take delight in that, I do not envy what is inferior, nor do I delight therein. Now, again, a very interesting simile Buddha is giving here to explain this situation to Magandhya. This is a very strong simile, in a way. A leper with sores and blisters on his limbs, being devoured by worms, scratching the scabs off the opening of his wounds with his nails, cauterizing his body over a burning charcoal pit. Now you can imagine what a kind of a suffering that leper is going through. So he is having all the sores and blisters, and they are oozing, and then they are devoured by worms. So what he is doing, he is scratching them using the nails. And then he is using a charcoal pit to cauterize. As a result of that, he is enjoying certain amount of pleasure. So that's why he is doing it. Because all that wounds and the sores are painful and itchy and all that, oozing, all the suffering is there. Now what he is doing is, he is using his hands to sort of scratch, and on the other hand he is using what we call a charcoal pit to cauterize his body. Anyway, his friends and then relatives, kinsmen, so they are taking him to a physician, and then he was completely cured. Now it's interesting. So that means leprosy somehow they were able to overcome during the Buddha's time. Anyway, now he was completely cured. And after being cured, then he is seeing another leper with all the same situation, with sores, blisters, and doing the same thing. And basically that means scratching the scabs off the openings of his wounds with the nails, and then cauterizing with the charcoal pit. So all that, he is doing the same thing as he was doing. Now Buddha is asking, what do you think, Magandhi? Would that man envy that leper for his burning charcoal pit or his use of medicine? Now Magandhi is telling, no, Master Gautama, why is that? Because when there is a sickness, there is need for medicine. And when there is no sickness, there is no need for medicine. Now we can see the situation. Now typically we think that the enjoyment or the sensual desires, satisfying sensual desires, is the main goal, and we have to fulfill that. So all these desires are something to fulfill, to satisfy. So we are going through all that. When we want to see something, we are immediately trying to see it, and there are enough technological advancements are there to do that nowadays. So there are handheld phones or devices. There are interesting theaters, movies, everything is available to satisfy this desire to gratify the eye. So all the interesting kind of very soft music and all the high level Dolby systems, everything is there for the satisfying of the ear. Nose also the same. All different flavors are available. And interesting tangibles are also available. So this is what we call as the development. And if all that is available in abundance, so then we call that as a first world. If you don't have that much, then we may be telling it is a third world. So anyway, this is the way that typically we measure our development. But what are we really doing is something that as Buddha explained here, like the leper using his fingers, nails, to scratch the scabs, and using that charcoal pit to cauterize the wounds. So we are not finding a complete solution. Even though we do that, still the burning is there. The wounds are painful. Still they are scratching or itchy. So again and again we have to do that. It's a never-ending process. So typically the approach is, as much as possible, we need to satisfy sensual desires. So that is what people are doing. Now, according to Buddha, it is very much like this leper scratching his wounds and cauterizing his wounds using a charcoal pit. Now, this is something to ponder in a way. Are we doing the same thing? Or are we trying to find out a permanent solution? And then again Buddha say another simile. So here, again taking for a leper, going through the same kind of situation, that he is also with sores, blisters on his limbs, being devoured by worms, scratching the scabs off the openings of his wounds with his nails, cauterizing his body over a burning charcoal pit. So that same thing he repeats. And again, he also was cured by a skillful physician. And after going through that remedy, he fully recovered. And he is now quite happy. And that he is cured from his leprosy. And now he is giving a different simile. Or can actually change the simile in a different way. He is telling that then two strong men would seize him by both arms and drag him towards a burning charcoal pit. What do you think, Mangani? Would that man twist his body this way and that? Yes, Master Gotama. Why is that? Because that fire is indeed painful to touch, hot and scorching. Now, Buddha, very interestingly, putting it in a very interesting way, what do you think, Mangandi? Is it only now that fire is painful to touch, hot and scorching? Or previously too, was that fire painful to touch, hot and scorching? Now, that is the same charcoal pit. Maybe those two strong men are taking him, which he used to cauterize his wounds. Suppose there was a charcoal pit and he often go closer to that in order to cauterize wounds when he was having leprosy. Because these wounds are painful, they are oozing, and all that pains were there, so he often went to that charcoal pit. But after completely cured, even when two strong men is grabbing him towards that charcoal pit, he doesn't want to go there. Now, Buddha is asking a very, very interesting question here. Is this charcoal pit only painful to touch, hot and scorching only now, or is it the same previously? Then this Magandhya mentioned, it is now painful to touch, hot and scorching, and previously also the same. Previously too, that fire was painful to touch, hot and scorching. But unfortunately, when that leper was going through the sores, blisters, and all being devoured by worms, scratching the scabs, all that is going through, his faculties were impaired. Thus, though the fire was actually painful to touch, he acquired a mistaken perception of it as pleasant. So that means previously also, this fire, this charcoal pit is painful, it is hot, it is burning. All that pain was there, but he had a different perception, mistaken perception. So that mistaken perception taken him towards that. So he is enjoying that. He thinks that he can get a satisfaction. He thinks that he can get a happiness, kind of a pleasure. So that's why he is being associating that. Now Buddha explained to Magandhya, so to Magandhya, in the past sensual pleasures were painful to touch, hot and scorching. In the future also, sensual pleasures will be painful to touch, hot and scorching. And now at present, the sensual pleasures are painful to touch, hot and scorching. But these beings who are not free from lust for sensual pleasures, who are devoured by craving for sensual pleasures, who burn with fever of sensual pleasures, have faculties that are impaired. Now you can see the this kind of how he has put things here. Devoured by craving, that leper was devoured by worms and burn with fever for sensual pleasures, and when the situation is like this, so the person is completely very much like distorted view. He's having a distorted view, kind of a sanya vipallasa. Probably you have heard about three kinds of distortions, or we can call them as inversions. Basically, so when we are going through certain kind of sense experience, so whatever is impermanent, we perceive as permanent. Whatever is suffering, we perceive as happiness. And whatever is non-self, we perceive as self. And whatever is loathsome, we perceive as beautiful. Now, it's complete upside down. Complete inversion is there. So, this is why we call them vipallasa. So, when one is having this distorted view, kind of an inversion, kind of a cognitive distortion, so that is where everything is in a, you know, upside down. We consider all that harmful as beneficial, all that painful as something useful and enjoyable. So we go through that. So here Buddha mentioned, so all these sensual pressures were, even the previous time or the past, even in the future, even right now, they are painful to touch, hot and scorching. But this is difficult to understand. I mean, we being, say, not being arahants, so how can we perceive like this? How these sensual pressures, why Buddha called that as painful to touch? How they are hot? How they are scorching. It may be difficult to understand immediately. But time to time, when we are experiencing kind of a bliss, which is far away from sensual pressures, after abandoning sensual desires, and for sort of prevented from these sensual pressures, if one is enjoying something supramundane, unworldly kind of happiness, so there one can see a kind of a difference. So immediately we being going through a household life and enjoying senses, so when we say that all these sensual pleasures are burning and hot and painful, it's difficult to understand why Buddha is telling like this. But time to time, if one is able to experience certain amount of completely unworldly or supramundane type of happiness, so compared to that, these sensual desires, sensual pleasures are burning. So they burn the mind. So that's why it is sometimes mentioned natthi raga samo aggi. There is no fire compared to the lust. So when someone is lustful, his mind is lustful, so he is burning with lust. He want it. So even he kills someone in order to get that, whatever the sensual object. So he's burning with that lust. So ultimately it is not a person who is killing in a way. That lust is, you know, very much like put that person into a slave. Make him a slave. So lust is operating in his mind, and so it is commanding that person. Okay, I need it. Please provide it. So lust is the command. So the lust is asking this, as a huge thirst internally. So now this fellow is trying his best to fulfill that thirst. And now he is burning with that thirst. So that's why he is going through all that difficulties, maybe having conflicts with others, or enduring certain pains, or even getting into quarrels with others. Because internal sensual desire, this lustful thought, is far more burning. More urge is there. So as a result of that, there's a faculties are impaired. So he has a distorted view now. So though the sensual pleasures are actually painful to touch, they acquire a mistaken perception of them as pleasant. So there are further Buddha actually mentioned, suppose Magandhya, there was a leper with sores and blisters and the same thing going on. The more he scratches the scab and cauterizes his body, the fouler, more evil smelling and more infected the openings of his wounds would become. Yet he would find a certain measure of satisfaction and enjoyment in scratching the openings of his wounds. Now this is what the worlding is going through by sensual, you know, satisfying the sensual desires. It's very much like scratching the scabs or cauterizing the body. There is a certain amount of satisfaction, but unfortunately the body becomes more fouler, more evil smelling and more infected. The things become worse and worse. If someone is enjoying these sensual pleasures, so he needs more. Something soft is not enough, now he needs more. He needs gross satisfaction. His faculties become more and more gross. That's why sometimes people are talking about abusing, sexual misconduct. Because going through some subtle, maybe a soft kind of satisfaction is not enough. Now they want someone else's wife, someone else's man. So indulgence is there. So the more such beings indulge in sensual pleasures, the more they are craving for sensual pleasures increases. And the more they are burned by their fever for sensual pleasures, yet they find a certain measure of satisfaction and enjoyment in dependence on the five sensual cords. Now, basically, more and more Buddha is trying to convince Magandhya regarding why it is necessary to go through sense restraint and why he has abandoned all his household life, all the pleasures. And after abandoning all that, now he is having a sublime kind of happiness. So while being in the present moment, the present state, he has no desire, there is no envy towards someone who is enjoying the sensual pleasures. Now actually there's an interesting incident happened there also. It is called Magandhya. So two Magandhya, Brahmin and his wife, actually wants to give their daughter to the Buddha. Her name is also Magandhya. Now many Magandhyas are there. So there the Buddha mentioned, so I don't even want to touch her body using the toe, not through the hand, but even the toe I don't want to touch her body. And he says that while I was going through the enlightening process under the Bodhi tree, there were more interesting divine, say, girls or angels, daughters of the Mara came to sort of seduce me. But I didn't even open my eyes. But now your daughter is full of all these loathsome things inside, having a human body. I don't even want to touch her using my toe. So this is very interesting things that we can see, that certain Brahmins want to use Buddha as a groom for their young daughter. So that means Buddha had a very beautiful, say, body maybe. But how Buddha has refused? Actually, that young Magandhya got really upset. She actually was having a revengeful thought, and ultimately she used bandits to blame and abuse Buddha and the Sangha. So that's another interesting story recorded in the Udana, I think. And she ultimately became the queen of the King Udayana and killed 500 queens who are actually devoted practitioners of the Buddha, Samavati and the other queens. So she actually killed all of them. Ultimately, King Udayana killed Magandhi also. So all that happens because people are having a lot of misconceptions. So at that level, the Magandhya, the lady Magandhya, is so conceited because she was so beautiful. And many kings and princes were asking her. But her parents didn't give her, and they want to give her to the Buddha. But Buddha refused. Buddha say, I don't even want to touch her using my toe. Now she actually got kind of furious after hearing that. Why this all kings and princes are asking me and I am refusing. Now this fellow is telling that he don't want even to touch me using the toe. What a kind of a shame. So after she became the queen of King Udayana, so she want to take the revenge. So she hired bandits, and using the bandits, she blamed Buddha and the Sangha. So that is one way she tried to get the blame, get the revenge. And later, Samavati and the other queens were very devoted to the Buddha and the teachings they were practicing. And she ultimately killed all of them. They burned all that 500 queens in the harem. Now, all these things we can see. Now these sensual desires are really burning. They have a lot of consequences. So people do all the mad things, all sorts of furious things or dirty things because these sensual desires are so blinding. Ragoko also andhakarano, achakku karano. So that's another statement made by Venerable Sariputta. Ragoko also andhakarano. So there he mentioned the lust is actually blinding oneself. Achakku karano. And it destroys the eyes. That means one is completely blinded when one is going through such a strong sensual desire. So that sensual desire impaired his faculties. So he can't recognize who he is. He can't remember the good, he can't remember the bad. He can't recognize, he can't hear someone else's advice. And it can even twist to a complete hate. So that's why sometimes the people are killing the other party. They are having certain amount of an affair. If something goes wrong, one person may kill the other person. Maybe husband kills the wife, wife kills the husband, or wife hires someone to kill the husband, or the fiancé kills the fiancé. So all these things are, you know, nowadays it is quite easy to hear how often these things are happening even in the nowadays society. Since we have good communication system, whatever happens in outside or say even outside the country, we can hear how people are going through. Due to lust, what kind of burning that people are going through. Due to lust, what the kind of crimes they are going through. They are conducting. And they are ruining themselves and they are even ruining the others. So that's why it is mentioned. Rāgo ko āvaso andhakarano achakku karano. So lust is blinding oneself. And it removes one's vision. Now all that is something that we can consider. How Buddha is now trying to convince Māgandhya, this wanderer Māgandhya here. And again, why Buddha wants to sort of maintain certain amount of restraint. And last time actually we discussed about in detail about different types of restrainment. And Buddha is giving another simile. We can discuss that later at another time. So with that, I like to conclude today's sutta teaching session. Now I like to open the session for questions.
Thank you, Bhante. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. If anyone is new to the group, welcome. You can ask or participate in the Q&A by raising your hand or sending your questions via chat. Geshan, welcome. You may ask your question.
Thank you, Jennifer. While listening to this Dhamma discussion, one of the things what I learned, I think I have heard this before as well, and one of the things what I learned, even in day-to-day life, I know it is a challenging aspect for us because we are in the household, you know, with the children's activities or your spousal activities, to restrain our own the senses, and to such extent that we need to sort of practice, I guess, to get to a destination where I think what Buddha is trying to sort of talk to Māgandhya, you know, how to sort of this is what I felt, the amount of effort that we need to strive in order to get to that destination. And also an observation from today's talking, when the young Queen Māgandhya or Princess Māgandhya that Buddha sort of refused to even touch from hand, but to use the, or not to even be touch from the toes. When Buddha made a statement like that, and she sort of got so angry to think about it, and then to kill 500 other nuns. I think the similar concept, even nowadays, I don't know if this comparisons, because the words that we use, the power of it, and somebody sort of take it such a harsh reaction to that. And I think to myself, I myself have experienced, sometimes I have used, and the reactions are much forceful or negative, and then from the opposite side. But for us to sort of discipline ourselves as well, how we respond to certain things. So I think with the sixth sense, of course, when the thought arises and you speak about it, if you want to make a negative sort of a speech on that. I think it is our duty, I guess, how to mellow it down forcefully and articulate it the best way you can, rather than hurt somebody else's feeling. That can sort of prevent such disasters in the aftermath, I guess. So I was thinking about it, and I thought that is a good observation from the talk from today. I thought I should bring it up rather than more than a question. I thought I wanted to make that sort of a statement.
Yeah. Yeah, thank you, Geshan. Basically, I agree with you. So we can't immediately get rid of lust. We can't immediately get rid of hatred or delusion. So the whole process of practice is to first, as you said correctly, kind of mellowing it down. So basically loosening it or weakening it. So slowly, slowly, we may be able to abandon that completely. But first, it's very much like diluting. So there are certain suttas called in Parihani Sutta, Buddha mentioned Raga Tanukattang, Dosa Tanukattang, Moha Tanukattang. So basically diluting the lust, diluting hatred, diluting delusion. So that's how it is happening slowly. So we can't say that immediately we are able to overcome lust completely. So that may not happen. So it's a kind of a gradual reduction which is going through. And Buddha interestingly asking to see whether it is happening. So that is a type of a verification Buddha asking to do. So in this Parihani Sutta, he highlights basically, actually this is the Venerable Sariputta, he is mentioning to the other monks, now Chattaro Dhamme Attani Samanupasati. Now he is asking, now you need to check whether these four types of skills is happening right now. So what are the four types? So as a result of one's practice, is there is any kind of reduction in lust? Is there is a reduction in hatred? Is there is reduction in the what you call the delusion as a result of the practice? So if it is happening, then you can be happy because your practice is working. So if it is not happening, that means you are in a downfall. So that means if one's lust is growing, if one's hatred is growing, if one's delusion is growing, so there Buddha mentioned, then you are in a downfall. But on the other hand, if lust is diminishing, reducing, diluting, if the hatred is diluting, and your delusion is reducing, and interestingly, some profound dhamma that easily that you can recognize, then you are in the progress side. So that is something he is asking, Venerable Sariputta is asking us to look at within ourselves. As a result of our practice, is it happening like that? So that means if someone is practicing Satipatthana, so one needs to look back and see, is there any kind of reduction of lust, reduction of hatred, reduction of delusion, and I am capable of understanding more profound dhamma more and more. So previously I didn't understand, but now I have a thorough understanding or a better understanding. So can I have that kind of attitude? Do I see such kind of a growth in myself? So that is something Venerable Sariputta is asking everyone to look at in oneself. If it is happening, then you are in the correct side. You are in the progressing side. So you can see how practice has to lead towards that direction. So the practice is for that purification. So therefore we can see if one is not undertaking any kind of practice, so it won't happen. So we can't expect any kind of dilution or reduction of lust, hatred, delusion by mere chance or by mere time. Rather, one has to undertake certain kind of a proper practice. So as a result of that practice, there's a fair chance that one has that advantage. Yeah.
Yes, I totally agree, and I think it is something what I have sort of noticed as well over the past years. Certain type of craving sort of diminishing, and I see that, and it's not a, so there is a reduction of that. I also have another question that I wanted to sort of clarify, and these are the senses restraints, and in this discourse it talks about the five areas, that is the beginning and the disappearance and the gratification and the danger and escape. Would you be kind to sort of, these are, I'm sure, the way that I have understood, as the thought that arises, and to see the beginning of that thought and the disappearance of that thought itself, and then not too sure about the gratification and danger. I think, is it the danger to talk about if that I didn't see and basically embrace the thought itself and the danger from that, or how should that be sort of understood?
Yeah, so
if you don't mind, do please clarify. Thank you.
Yeah. Actually, we can explain with respect to a thought, but it's better to talk with respect to a form, sound, smell, taste, tangibles, etc. So basically towards the five sensual chords. So when we are going through a beautiful sight, so there is a kind of a gratification, there is a kind of a happiness. So there is some beauty in it, and as a result of that, we think about it and we sort of fantasize about it, and certain amount of delight arising in oneself. So that is the gratification part, the asada side. On the other hand, the adinava is that you may lose all your good qualities and your peacefulness of the mind, unattached nature of the mind, whatever the sublime qualities you had, all that you can lose, and instead the raga dosa moha can be further improved, increased, and you may fall away from the Nibbana, and basically you are in the downfall. So that is the adinava side. And as we discuss, all that burning part, burning through the lust, that is all the adinava side, the danger. And seeing the arising and passing away, how these forms are arising, how these forms are disappearing. So that is actually the practice. So one is going through Satipatthana practice, one is practicing, say, for example, elements meditation. So going to a little bit further, more subtle or profound level, and seeing all that, whatever the form is constructed. So those constituent parts, how they are arising and passing away. So that is a kind of a knowledge in a way, arising and passing away knowledge. So what are the causes of this arising? So how, maybe if we consider the form aggregate, how the ahara, various nutriments are causing this aggregate to arise, and with the non-availability of that, how it is passing away. So likewise, you are thoroughly investigating all that phenomena, so they are arising and passing away side. Now as a result of this practice, time to time, now see, probably mind is freed totally from the form aggregate. And we can say it's a form, the sound, smells, taste, tangibles, that is also included in the form aggregate. So time to time you might escape from that. So that means your mind is not associating any of these. Mind doesn't have any perception about it. Mind doesn't have any kind of delight in it. Rather, mind is enjoying now a temporary freedom. So this is the escape currently what is available, kind of a tadanga nibbuti, a temporary nibbana, temporary escape from these sensual desires and the five sensual cords. So that escape, now you need to make abundant, maximize, so that it becomes your more and more type of a pasture, more and more available to you. So that is the whole practice in a way. So that is where you are developing Noble Eightfold Path in order to maximize that state of mind, maximize that peacefulness of the mind. Now you are completely away from the sensual desires, completely away from all that burning effects. Rather, now the mind is calm, relaxed, peaceful. So there you found a kind of an escape. So that escape has to be maximized. So in order to do that, you need to abandon or weaken all lust, hatred and delusion. So there are many different directions that we need to think about. And when lust, hatred and delusion is weakened, abandoned, more and more easily, naturally, you can dwell in that peacefulness of the mind. So it becomes more available to you. It becomes your new norm, in a way, in today's terms. So it's a different mentality, in a way. Previously, you were in a burning, satisfactory, or sense-desire-based, or pleasure-principle-based domain. But now you are in a different domain. So you are very much in a peaceful state of mind, trying to make it abundant. So this is the process, actually, we can learn, which is recommended by the Buddha.
Thank you, Thiruvan Saranai.
Yeah, Thiruvan Saranai.
Thank you. I'd like to invite Kumudini for the next question.
Thank you. Thank you. I have heard this story of the 500 ladies being killed by, and when I heard it, I have heard this long time ago, and even when I heard it then, and I the talk about Buddha saying that he wouldn't want to touch this lady with his foot,
mm-hmm.
even sort of sounded to me like very uncharacteristic of the Buddha.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I felt it was very, very harsh. He could have... I'm being honest to you.
Yeah, yeah.
And I am of the opinion that this word has been dramatized and put in the sutras in this way.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't think Buddha would have said it quite like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. That is my feeling, because Buddha's talk is so gentle and mellow and all that.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Even when I heard it so many years ago, I thought to myself.
Mm.
And even when you were saying this to me,
mm-hmm.
Today, to us, this talk, I felt like that.
Mm-hmm.
That is my feeling, because I feel it is too harsh.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, I'm telling you, I'm an old woman now.
Mm.
When I was younger and the people of the opposite sex tried to make advances to me,
mm-hmm.
I never retorted in that way. I got aside in a more sort of, you know, without making an enemy, so
mm-hmm.
to say.
Understood, yeah.
That's what I'm saying,
mm-hmm.
Bhante.
Mm-hmm.
I am not criticizing the Buddha.
Yes, yes.
Because I know he has not said it.
Mm-hmm.
I think that Dhamma has been written in that to
mm-hmm.
make a drama of it.
Mm-hmm.
That's my feeling.
Mm-hmm. So both things can happen. one thing I agree is that Buddha is more soft speaking, and as a result of that, he might have mentioned in a different way. But in order to highlight the situation, probably the writers, the persons who recorded it might have put the harsh words. So that is one approach, one opinion that one can have, agree. But on the other hand, there are certain other occasions that Buddha also used harsh words. Because in order to, you know, strongly pass the message. Now here, the two Brahmins, that is Brahmin Magandhya and his wife, had the potential to enter the sasana and become arahants. I think one of them become an arahant, the other one become an anagami or something like that. So they both actually, after this discussion, so they thoroughly understood. They go, because they were very intelligent people. They actually, how they found Buddha as a suitable companion for her, for their daughter, is through the marks. Actually, when Buddha has done that purposely, so while walking, he put the marks of his foot. So this couple, this Brahmin couple noticed that. And there are the lady Magandhya, she noticed that Buddha's marks, and he says, oh, this is a remarkable person, not an ordinary person. So he could be quite suitable to our daughter. Our daughter is also a remarkable person. So likewise, now they are having a kind of over-appreciated or estimated capacity about their daughter. And they are finding a suitable companion for her. And so Buddha in a way inspired them first by showing his sort of remarkable nature. But on the other hand, when they want to marry her, immediately refusing like that, I mean, made a stunning change in their mind. So it's a kind of a strategy that Buddha used in order to completely draw their attention to a completely different path. Even though Buddha is a remarkable person and they found him as a remarkable person, but now he is completely changing their attitude. Okay, I have completely abandoned these sensual desires, completely abandoned this sensual gratification. So as we can see even in the Magandhya Sutta that we are discussing today, so what are the kind of similes that Buddha has used? Very strong similes. And very strongly Buddha, they are also, Buddha was talking to the, you know, that the Brahmin couple, but unfortunately it is being heard by their daughter. So she was so, you know, proud about her beauty. And when someone is talking her like that, she got really upset. She got really, you know, hateful about that way of talking. But the message was strongly communicated to the Brahmin couple, the old couple. They were fully convinced. They ultimately become the followers of the Buddha, and they became monk and a nun, and ultimately fully realized the Dhamma. So these are different ways. So that's why sometimes Buddha mentioned, he uses soft words, he uses harsh words. He uses both soft and harsh words in order to tame people. So therefore we can see him as a teacher. It is not that every time a teacher would have kind of a soft words, but sometimes in order to tame some you know, harsh characters, he might use the harsh words as well.
Thank you, Bhante.
Yeah.
Even the previous person who taught, was his name Geshan, also mentioned, I don't know if I misunderstood him, but I felt he also mentioned that we have to mellow our, you know, so I felt that, I don't know whether he meant it the way I am thinking. I felt that he also had the opinion that it should have been more mellow. I don't know, Bhante, but to me, I feel like that. So I'm glad you explained it.
Yeah.
But what a commotion, 500 people.
No, by the interesting thing is, though, they also, now these are, I mean, there are many, many areas that we need to consider. Now, Samavati and the others, they are devoted Buddhist practitioners. They are offering flowers, and they listen Dhamma through their servant Kujuttara, and it's a very interesting story. And they all were attained. So that's another interesting thing. They all were attained, but there is a strong karma also coming behind them.
Oh, I see.
So
So
actually, in a previous life, they burn a Paccheka Buddha, and so that strong karma,
those 500
They are not ladies, yes. So during a previous birth, so they were going through that that strong karma also. So now this is in this life they have to go through that. So that's another karmic repercussion is also involved. So likewise, it's quite difficult to analyze everything by a single, reason. So there are many, many complicated reasoning is there. It's very difficult for us to, give a full comprehensive analysis. But many, many causes are conditioning the whole process.
Thank you, Bhante.
Yeah,
thank you for your explanation. I feel better about it. Thank you so much.
Tirvan Saranai.
Okay, thank you. I'd like to invite Chita Devi for the next question.
Yes, thank you, Jennifer. Actually, Bhante, I totally agree with Kumudini that I felt the same very much and very strongly also, because those two people, the young girl's parents are very good people. So I'm sure this is how I am thinking, and I like to think it like that, that he would have said it in a nice way, but very firmly and very definite about his answer, so there was no need to say that he won't even touch her with his toe. I think that these are all translator people have written it in the way they thought or said. So of course he said it very firmly, but he would have said it in a very compassionate way, because those two parents are very good people, and the young girl, I mean, what can she do? She had nothing to do with it. So that is how I think that in the translation, in the writing down, and everything was written in a way to show that the Buddha was very much against this the marriage of this young lady. But it was said it in a way that they thought it should have been said. I think that in May it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
You have explained it to me, but this is my own personal view, because Buddha was too compassionate to... I mean, he has said very strongly in certain instances when the people were not nice people, and had to be really, they had to realize what he was trying to say. And I think these two very good parents would have understood if he said it very firmly and in a very definite way. And I don't think he would have said, I don't need to touch her with my toe. I think that's quite humiliating for the parents as much as to the younger, but anyway, that's just a thought. It doesn't matter, but I personally don't think that these are all written, Bhante. All written. It's not said, they didn't hear the Buddha say it. So don't you agree, Bhante, that it might have been said in a nicer way?
I was not in the incident, so I can't I can't see the both sides. I see both possibilities are there. So one of that's why I put the both possibilities. One option is that the writers want to emphasize the situation, so they might have used certain emphasis there. Or the other option is that Buddha somehow want to pass the message very strongly in a striking manner, and otherwise it is not satisfying for the. For the people, so probably he might have done the same thing. It can happen both way. We can't give an ultimate judgment here.
Yes, I agree. But I think that knowing the Buddha and how he has conducted himself, he would have said it in a very firm way, no doubt. But anyway, that's just a thought. The other thing that I wanted to say was that now we always have to, when we are conducting ourselves in thought, speech and action, we always have to look at our what we are doing. And you said, do we have lobha, dosha, moha? Now lobha and dosha is not difficult to see most times, but the moha is sometimes, people do things out of the goodness of their heart, but it may be totally acting in an ignorant manner. So I just wanted to ask you, how does one or how does one develop that moha aspect to make it finer and more to show the for us to see that, you know, that part of it?
Yeah, I feel that more we understand the Dhamma, more we understand the true nature, so that is where the moha become thinner and thinner, and basically more often that we can maintain a penetrative type of mind. So typically what happens is we simply glancing on the surface and mind get tangled on such situation. Mind get into more thinking, overthinking, prapancha, conceptual proliferation, all that indicates that mind is completely tangled. And that means moha, that means delusion. But the more you are able to keep the mind away from all that, more the mind's freedom is intact, more the mind freedom is protected. So that means you are maintaining certain amount of wisdom within. It appears like you are doing nothing, but the profound understanding is protecting your inner, you know, conscience, not getting entangled. So mind's capacity to remain quiet, remain unattached or uninvolved, not getting into any kind of an indulgence. So that indicates fair amount of wisdom within oneself. So if one's capacity for that is improving, so the contrary, that we on the opposite, we can say the delusion is reducing. Your wisdom is more improving, the delusion is reducing. So that's why you are not getting attached to something, not getting entangled with something. Rather, your freedom is protected, freedom is prolonged.
Mm-hmm. So, like, of course, you see some people are very kind and they do things, but it's really not very, not in a wise way, you know, though they're good people and they do the Dhamma and they understand the Dhamma. And also what I'm hearing is that the less involved you get with situations or people or whatever it is, and the calmer the mind is, then there's less delusion. Is that what I'm hearing?
I can't say that you are not involved in the sense that you are not being kind, or you are not, you are not conducting your duties or something like that. Rather, what I'm trying to say here is you are not getting deluded. You may be participating in many events. You may be conducting a lot of activities. But how about keeping the mind unattached? How about keeping the mind in emptiness? How about the mind keeping with a peaceful state, knowing that all what you are doing is, you know, conventional, they are mere duties, and at any moment you can have a mind which is completely free. So basically, as I mentioned, you know, it's very much like this answer to Bahir. Ditte dittamattang, sute sutamattang, mute mutamattang, vinyate vinyatamattang. So you see, you hear, and you smell, taste, touch, still thoughts may come. But mind is capable of maintaining fair amount of freedom. And it is not getting entangled.
Yeah. Yes, Pante, continue.
Yeah, yeah.
So what I'm hearing is that when you find that your mind is more peaceful and less proliferation in any situation, then you can say and think that your mind is less deluded. Would that be a right assumption?
Yes, yes. And as here in this sutta, which I have referred today, that the Parihani Sutta, where Venerable Sariputta explaining to the other monks, so he adds another interesting point. So he say, Gambiresu kopanasa thana thanesu panya chakkum khamati. So that means whatever some profound dhammas are available, so in that your mind is more, you know, getting interested, you want to see more, you want to understand more, and that profound knowledges are available to you, you can understand such difficult, profound things. So that means your wisdom is growing. Say, for example, you at the beginning you didn't have any understanding about the, say, Patisamuppada. Now suppose as a result of the practice, as a result of years of practice, say you have some understanding about the Patisamuppada. More you continue your practice, more you may have further understanding about Patissamuppada. So likewise, so there are some profound areas in the Dhamma. So now your mind is capable of understanding even though those profound teachings. So that means your wisdom is growing, delusion is reducing.
Yes, so the more you penetrate the Dhamma,
exactly.
Then less the delusion. That is the answer to my
exactly.
question, right?
Exactly, yeah.
So for that we have to do more, more analytically we have to look at the Dhamma and also the world, right? Vipassana.
Yeah, we can say
more
so.
Vipassana.
More penetrative type of knowledge, yes.
Yes. Because we are not just looking at it, we are just looking beyond.
Exactly.
It's like this body, I mean, we are looking beyond this form, we are looking at the elements, we are looking at the, the particles, we are going beyond, right? Mm-hmm. That's what I'm hearing.
Correct,
right?
Correct. Yes, yes.
Yes. Thank you, Bhante.
Yeah.
Thank you. Bhante, are there any questions on your side?
No questions.
Okay. And also, I don't believe there's yet an update on you or Venerable Dhammajiva's U.S. retreat, U.S. or Canada retreats, right? No updates there?
This year?
This or next year.
Next year,
probably
next. On next year, Bhante Dhammaji is visiting U.S. and Canada. They are planning now, but the retreat schedule is not yet published.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you, Bhante. We'll check back later.
I'll make you, known about it once it is available. But still, they are, finalizing things.
I see. Okay. Thank you. Looks like Chita Devi, do you have a follow-up question?
Oh, Geeta.
No, Jennifer. No, thank you.
Okay. But it looks like Geeta may have a question. You may unmute. Geeta, are you able to unmute?
Okay, is that all right?
Yes.
Yes, now we can hear you.
Okay, thank you. Bhante, I want to clarify the term Chittanupassana because sometimes I hear it, believe it refers to mindfulness of the overall state of mind. And other places it says awareness of thought, and other places awareness of a contemplation of consciousness. So it's, I think those three are a little bit different.
Mm-hmm.
What is it that I need to, that one focuses on in that foundation?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so basically at the Chittanupassana level you can say that you are simply starting to recognize the different thoughts. Say, when lustful thought is there, you can recognize it's a lustful thought. When hateful thought is there, you can recognize it's a hateful thought. When loving kindness thought is there, it's a loving kindness thought. So this is the beginning, very much like. But it is not the end. So as you are continuing, so there it is leading more, the second part. That state of the mind is also then included, possible. When your mind is concentrated, you can know that. When your mind is scattered, still you can know that. When your mind is, uplifted, you can know that. When your mind is not that uplifted or, in a kind of depressed, I can't say really depressed, whatever kind of a sorrowful state, still you can know that. And when mind is fairly heightened, that means you are in a jhana or something like that, still you can know that. It is not that you are fully absorbed in it. Rather, the capacity to know is still available. That is why in the Chittanupassana, it is highlighted like Mahagatan Chittam, Mahagatan Chittam Ti Pajanati, Amahagatan Chittam, Amahagatan Chittam Ti Pajanati. So when the mind is fully uplifted, so you can still know that. You are not fully carried away by that blissful state. Rather, you have that knowing capacity retained. And even further, Buddha mentioned, Vimuttan Chittam Ti Pajanati. Avimuttan chittam, avimuttan chittam ti pajanati. So that means when the mind is liberated, when the mind is freed, release, that is also that you can know. And when it is not released, still you can know. So it's a fair range. The Cittanupassana is explained. The beginning, as you said, right, is the simple recognition of various thoughts, but it can lead towards more sublime states as well. It's a gradual development in a way.
Okay, so yeah, initially it's more specific thoughts and then more general kind of picture of what's happening in the mind.
Yes, yes, mind we can state. Say so, yes. So that's why it is further get into the Dhammanupassana. Now you are becoming more specific. When a particular lustful ingredient is there, still one can recognize. If there is a symptom of hate is there, still you can recognize. So your practice become more and more refined. To that level, now you are going further and further.
Right, so seeing that those more finely, that you are now moving into the Dhammanupassana sort of region.
Yes, yes. Now, on the other hand, we can see that we can know that, we can know that. So that indicate, so you are in a different level, isn't it? So lust is not you, hate is not you, the concentration is not you, but the knowing is operating at a different level. So you have the knowing capacity, which is operating at a different level. So while being in that knowing capacity, while dwelling there, you can know all these ripples coming and going.
The objects that come and
objects coming and going. So the knowing is entirely different capacity, entirely different skill that we have. So you have this observing capacity, observing quality of the mind, which can observe all this coming and going various phenomena. So they are coming and going. They are completely impermanent.
Okay, Bhante. Thank you. I have to dwell on that.
Okay, okay.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay, Bhante, I believe that should be the last question.
Okay. Okay, then thank you, Jennifer, for participation and your coordination. And I wish you have a good retreat time in the future. So then we'll wind up today's session.
Actually, I will be here next week as well.
Okay,
the week
great,
after.
Great. So then, great, great. So we'll have the retreat, online retreat. So we'll share the merits. We have spent 1.5 hours. We'll share the merits with all the celestial beings, past relatives, and whoever in need of merits. And we wish these merits help us also to understand Buddha's teaching and realize Nibbana. We'll use the traditional verses. Ettavata ca amhehi sambhataṁ punya sampadaṁ sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhiyā. Ettavata ca amhehi sambhataṁ punya sampadaṁ sabbe bhuta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhiyā. Ettavata ca amhehi sambhataṁ punya sampadaṁ sabbe satta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhiyā. Ākāsaṭṭhā ca bhummaṭṭhā devānāga mahiddikā puññantaṁ anumoditvā ciraṁ rakkhantu sāsanaṁ. Ākāsaṭṭhā ca bhummaṭṭhā devānāga mahiddikā puññantaṁ anumoditvā ciraṁ rakkhantu desanaṁ. Ākāsaṭṭhā ca bhummaṭṭhā devānāga mahiddikā puññantaṁ anumoditvā ciraṁ rakkhantu mam paraṁ. Idaṁ vo ñātīnaṁ hotu sukitā huntu ñātayo. Idaṁ vo ñātīnaṁ hotu sukitā huntu ñātayo. Idaṁ vo ñātīnaṁ hotu sukitā huntu ñātayo. Imina puṇya kammena māme bāla samāgamo satāṁ samāgamo hotu yāva nibbāna pattiyā. Imina puṇya kammena māme bāla samāgamo satāṁ samāgamo hotu yāva nibbāna pattiyā. Imina puṇya kammena māme bāla samāgamo satāṁ samāgamo hotu yāva nibbāna pattiyā. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.